Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Entertainment Notables explore the inequality of our national culture via America Divided, Epic's new series that launched this past Friday. Executive producers Lucian Reed and Richard Rowley join me next. Our second half hour reunites us with Alex Corral, the producer and main subject of Los Cowboys. This unscripted series took off on Hulu last year and started playing on Galavision last week. Also ahead, ABC revives The Gong Show. We're not kidding about that. A&E gets ready for live ride-alongs with Cops, and our classic trivia question of the week, and a special announcement about a very special guest coming Wednesday at noon. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted you are with us for this first Monday of October for the program All About Television. And to all of our Jewish listeners along with Blog Talk Radio Live, we hope you are having a great start to your high holy day season, the Rosh Hashanah. We got some wonderful guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and the show gets better when you are involved. So get your voice going and get your phone ringing with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a chat room going as well. It's SimonApple04. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and we're waiting for you to be in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, and other people can be live with you. Our producers from the new series on Epic, America Divided, join me here in New York after these news notes. ABC will revive The Gong Show next year. The Campy Talent Showcase, hosted and produced by Chuck Barris on NBC and syndication during the 1970s, will get a 10-episode run with Will Arnett among the executive producers. When will ABC put this on, and who will fill Barris's shoes? No one is disclosing yet. Cops to the Second Power. That's what you can call Live PD, a new series coming to A&E October 28th. Viewers will see 2 hours per week of live ride-alongs with police across the country using dash cams and other advanced technology. 8 Friday episodes are planned, hosted by ABC legal analyst Dan Abrams, along with members of the Dallas Police Department. And that's news notes for today. And now our big announcement. This is the first of 3 episodes we are doing this week to start off October and our third month of Year 10 on the air as the program All About Television. And we have a very special episode coming your way on Wednesday. This Sunday night, HBO premieres the brand new series, Divorce, starring Sarah Jessica Parker, who also serves as executive producer. The co-star will be our very special guest on an episode Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Academy Award nominee and co-star of Divorce, Thomas Hayden Church, will be my guest on Wednesday. That's Thomas Hayden Church, an Academy Award nominee, co-star of Divorce, which begins this coming Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. He will be with us at a special tomorrow televised time, Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And yes, Thomas, we'll take your phone calls and your chat room reaction. So join us with Thomas Hayden Church exclusively right here on Blog Talk Radio, Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern Time. And now let's get to our first segment. Several years ago, Showtime presented an unusual documentary series, unusual because of the way it was done. It's called Years of Living Dangerously. And rather than do a documentary the normal way, in this case on climate change, the producers decided to have celebrities, notables all over the place, go all over the place to see for themselves, to experience for themselves what climate change was all about, and more importantly, what they might be able to do about it. The series won awards all over the place, and the second season of Years of Living Dangerously will premiere at the end of the month on National Geographic Channel, kicking off a brand-new Earth Week campaign for them. However, some of the executive producers of the first season of Years of Living Dangerously are now working on the brand-new series of Epics, which premiered this past Friday, September 30th, America Divided. Joining me here in New York, the executive producers of the program, Richard Rowley and Lucian Reed. Both of you gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Good afternoon.
Lucy, I'll start with you. Since the show has been on the air a few days, have you gotten any reaction from Epics' viewers or from the network?
Not from the viewers yet, but certainly the channel has been very supportive and very positive in their feedback. They've been great supporters and great help in the project. So they seem very satisfied, very happy. We're very happy. And, you know, I can only imagine that the audience is. It's been a great project. And, yeah, we're looking forward to actually, you know, hearing what people have to think as the series unfolds.
Richard, why do you think this format that both of you developed with Years of Endangered Seeds will work again, this time covering a far more deeper subject, the situation about inequality in this country?
I really think that the series is the narrative form of our moment. You know, I mean, on the scripted side, it really kind of dominates our media scape. With the possible exception of Star Wars, there'll never be another Star Wars, another feature film that is, you know, dominates the national conversation when it's released. Instead, we have, you know, Game of Thrones, we have The Wire, we have these great scripted series that now, you know, for a variety of reasons, have become kind of our sort of cultural touchstones. And the same thing is increasingly true in the nonfiction space. And so it was really exciting, you know, back with Years to move into that, to begin to explore the kind of possibilities of a series where you have a sustained engagement with an audience week after week, where you have the ability to arc storylines over multiple episodes. And you have the ability, because of the time that it spans, you know, it's not just 90 to 120 minutes. It's, you know, 5.5 hours, 5 episodes in this case. You have the ability to you know, build out an entire world with a level of nuance and subtlety and detail that would be impossible in a feature documentary. So really, I mean, series are incredibly exciting on both sides of the fiction nonfiction divide, and it's actually absolutely necessary to use the series format for an issue like inequality in America, because I mean, the central premise of the series is that. You know, we have all of these issues around inequality, you know, from the criminal justice system to education to housing to health, you know, and then that can, you know, be boiled down to this kind of blood knot of race, class, and gender at the center of American politics for, you know, hundreds of years. I mean, but these issues too often are taken as sort of siloed, independent, separate policy points, not. But, you know, the premise of the series is that it's impossible to understand these things independently, that you can only understand them when you see the whole picture and see them all at the same time. So really, I mean, the series was the way to tell this story that we feel is, you know, the most important story going on in this country right now.
And I mean, I would say, too, to your point about the celebrity celebrity correspondence, excuse me, is that, you know, there's a tremendous power in using correspondence and using people to explore these stories that the audience is familiar with, that the audience has a positive relationship with, you know, that can help carry them through what are, you know, by and large, very complicated issues, especially as Rick was talking about, where you're trying to sort of point out that it's not just, you can't just silo these problems, but you have to understand the relationship between them across stories, within the stories. I also feel like, too, I mean, you know, we're at sort of a place now in our relationship with the media and relationship with journalism where, you know, the public's trust in media and journalists is not terribly high. And I think, you know, bringing in people that people are familiar with who are not coming at it from some sort of journalistic perspective that, you know, that kind of carries all the baggage of the media's relationship with the public or vice versa into it, but are coming into it bringing kind of their own, you know, their own curiosity, their own activism, their own relationship to the stories. I mean, we really tried to, you know, couple the stories with the correspondents, you know, the correspondents who had real emotional, organic, biographical connection to these stories. I think, you know, using these non-traditional correspondents who people are familiar with and who people by and large like, that's why they're famous, that's why they have great careers, that's why they work, I think, you know, is a very powerful tool that we used in Years, and I think, you know, with America Divided, we really kind of took that tool to the next level by, you know, as I said, sort of really, really pairing, you know, the correspondents, you know, with the stories based on their actual sort of lived experience of biographies and passions. So.
Richard, how delicate a balance is it to have the notable, the entertainment notable celebrity with the issue that they're covering. Whether it's Norman Lear doing it, whether it's Peter Sarsgaard doing it, whether it's Zach Galifianakis doing it, Rosario Dawson, who's another one of the correspondents. Is it that easy or is that difficult depending on what they're focusing on?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, as Lucian said, we took a lot of care to pair correspondence with stories that they had an organic connection to. So, for instance, Jesse Williams is a correspondent. He was a high school teacher in his youth, and so he's doing a story on education, on inequality in education in the school-to-prison pipeline. Common, a Chicago native who grew up in the south side of Chicago, he's doing a story on the criminal justice system in the city and has a real deep felt lived connection to it. Zach Galifianakis is from an old North Carolinian family and feels very deeply the crisis that's going on in that state and in an old political family. Actually, one of his uncles ran against Jesse Helms back in the day. So every one of the correspondents of the, you know, is a known person as a celebrity, but has a real felt connection, lived connection to their story. And that also, you know, is important. I mean, I think too often, in kind of conventional news media, correspondents, you know, sort of parachute in and they have a detachment, a sort of forced objective detachment from the stories and the people that they're covering, where they're trying to hear one side, hear another, and find some, you know, some whatever in the middle. But rather than you know, be immediately emotionally connected to the people who they're talking to. So, you know, every single one of our correspondents was personally moved and changed by the things that they saw. And it was a really, an exciting and interesting process to kind of see. I mean, back in the beginning, you know, when I first came on to the Years Living Dangerously project, which I was a DP on it. I wasn't one of the creators or the producers, but I was initially sort of skeptical of what a celebrity correspondent would be like. But really, I mean, you know, we were shooting with Lucian and I were shooting with and Sally, all of us were shooting with Harrison Ford in Indonesia, and really saw over the course of that shoot how the whole different set of skills that that someone who's been spent a lifetime in front of a camera like brings to the table that a television correspondent doesn't, right? I mean, immediate like emotive engagement with people, feels the camera and knows how to turn interviews into scenes where, you know, there are real stakes, like something's really happening, not just they're not just moments to elicit information. So actually, it is delicate and you have to choose, you know, stories that are true to the character of the correspondent, but it works really amazingly well. And it is something kind of, you know, I think new. I think, you know, America Divided, there's not another show on television. There hasn't been ever another show on television that really looks and feels like this show, that combines this kind of, you know, narrative arcs and dynamic, you know, narrative intensity with, you know, nonfiction storytelling.
And that, you know, grapples with so many, you know, critically important issues at the same time and sort of seeks to synthesize them for an audience to give them, you know, not just a single issue kind of report, but really, you know, a sort of a holistic snapshot of what, you know, the major problems the country is facing today.
American Divide is FX's brand new documentary series. You can find it on Friday nights. The second episode will be on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. FX is a paid cable network. It's available on cable and satellite. Also available on demand in many markets around the country. And we're talking with two of the executive producers on the series, Lucian Reed and Richard Rowley, that joining me live this in New York this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So I'm happy to be with you, our first episode of October 2016. Delighted you are with us. Again, to all our Jewish listeners, a very happy Rosh Hashanah first day, part of the high holiday season. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Once again, we have a special episode of the show coming your way on Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. My guest will be the Academy Award nominee and the co-star of the brand new HBO series, Divorce, Thomas Hayden Church. And coming up in our regular time period Friday at this very hour, 3 to Eastern Noon Pacific, we will take a look at the multicultural sizzle reel upfront that took place this past Friday here in New York. It will take place later this month in Los Angeles with the organizer, Kiki Melendez, rescheduled from last Friday. Also, we on Friday night will launch a new series called My Life is a Telenovela. It's all about the people dealing with that very distinct Spanish language art form. And we'll have executive producer Todd Lubin with us hours before the show goes on the air on that network. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Richard, were any of the assignments given to the celebrities, any that, in fact, when it happened, brought them out of their comfort zone, surprised them in a particular way?
Yeah, I mean, I think for all, I mean, for many people, actually, let's talk about Jesse Williams, who did the School of Prison Pipeline story in Florida. For him, an experience that he had that was common to a lot of the other correspondents is to begin, you know, to begin the process trying to be like the correspondents who they see on TV, like trying to be Mike Wallace or trying to seem like they're on 60 Minutes. And it took, it always takes a while for people to get to the point where they realize that that's not the role that they're being cast in, right? I mean, that they're you know, I mean, he very quickly found his footing there and then, you know, became, you know, and just began to relate to people as a human being, you know, as a human being who's curious and passionate about these issues and who's propelled along his story by his own kind of innate curiosity, but wasn't like going into an interview trying to hit a certain number of bullet points, but was going into a conversation, you know, with the kind of passions that animated him in real life. And his story was kind of amazing. I mean, it took twists and turns as we went too. I mean, we started out in this, it's a school district in Florida that includes St. Petersburg, Florida, that is, has over the last 7 years, it has become the highest concentration of academic failure in America. There's like this 1 5-mile square there that has the 5 worst elementary schools in the state, basically. And this all happened very quickly in the course of just 7 years. And so in the course of investigating in that, we discover that it's because, 7 years ago, they resegregated all the schools in Pinellas County, and these schools were failing. So the first, we begin looking at resegregation, which actually is a problem in many school districts around the country and how that impacts the lives of kids there. And it was like halfway through, you know, some of the parents we were talking to mentioned that their children had been arrested out of school by uniformed police officers. And so it became an investigation on a totally different level of the ways that arrests the criminalization of discipline in predominantly African American schools is you know, funneling kids straight from their classrooms into the criminal justice system, into jail, and derailing their lives forever. So his story, you know, deepened very quickly and moved from what we expected to into, you know, new territory.
For anyone who thinks that segregation passed away as a situation, a volatile situation, obviously, in the 1960s and 70s, I have a hunch that story is going to bubble up some things.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and one of the great things about doing a series like this is that we have, in the same episode, we have Norman Lear does a story on housing segregation in New York City, where he goes undercover and wears a hidden camera to do a housing test in the Bronx, where he shows up and asks to see apartments, and he's shown several. And then a black man with the same economic profile shows up in the same building, and there's nothing there to see. And so, you know, there's a widespread pattern across New York City of landlords systematically discriminating against people of color because they, you know, because they see that race and class map onto each other, and as a way to kind of try to jack up their rents and gentrify neighborhoods more quickly. So, I mean, you see that, you know, we have fair housing laws in America, but we don't have fair housing. In the same episode, you have Jesse Williams' education story, where you see the impact of this housing discrimination on school systems and the way those two systems kind of play back and forth to each other. I mean, the You know, Brown v. Board was, you know, 60 years ago. It was a long time ago. the Supreme Court ruled that that separate and unequal separate schools were inherently unequal. But now, and you know, and so we started busing programs all over the country. Those busing programs are beginning to be shut down, and so we're seeing, you know, a dramatic resegregation of schools over the last couple of decades. And an increasing achievement gap between black and white students. But those two systems, housing and education, really play together, and you're able to see that, concretely in the series as it unfolds.
Richard, as Lucien noted, you have several iconic people in television who are working alongside you as executive producers. Norman Lear is one who is now back in action with the Netflix revival of his One Day at a Time, featuring a Latino perspective. And another is Shonda Rhimes, who is obviously one of the hottest people in television right now with the ABC schedule on Thursday nights and other shows coming up. What was it like to work with both Lear and Rhimes together as executives? Did it give you any ideas about how to frame the series, how to make the subjects more impactful?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Norman especially, I mean, he's had a lifetime of engagement and commitment to these causes, and, you know, he not only served as executive producer, but also, as we discussed, served as a correspondent, and, you know, he especially was there with us kind of every step of the way, with his, you know, not just his ideas about social justice and his, you know, willingness to sort of do whatever it took, essentially, to do, you know, to make the most compelling story, but also, you know, not surprisingly, was there to kind of help us, you know, with the idea of like, well, how, you know, these are very important and very serious topics. You know, how can we also make this somewhat entertaining to sort of help the message come through? And you know, he's a past master at that, and so it was just a tremendous experience to work with him. And, you know, and of course, too, I mean, just every, you know, frankly, you know, he's such a legend and so well regarded that, you know, his association with the project opened a tremendous number of doors. I mean, not just, you know, with the talent, with the platform, with the subjects, you know, at every step of the way. You know, he was a tremendous asset, and I think we all are, and I know I especially am, just really grateful and think of it as a real kind of high point in my career to have been fortunate enough to work with him on this project and to, you know, kind of really absorb, absorb his ideas about television, his ideas about entertainment, his passion for the topic, his commitment, and to see, you know, that, you know, at 94, you can still be out there making a difference in the world. That was just tremendous, I think, for all of us.
Lucien Reed and Richard Rowley are two of the executive producers on America Divided, the new documentary series running currently on FX, the pay cable network, available on cable and satellite all over the place. Other places also, it's on video on demand. The second episode will premiere this Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Lucy and Richard joined us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're aboard as well, wherever you are along the Blog Talk Radio way. Tom and Applebaum with you live from New Web, New York. 73 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment, get it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We will have more about FX on Monday, on next Monday's episode. Why? Because on October 16th, FX will premiere not one, but its first scripted series, two of them back-to-back. We'll have one of them presented on our next Monday show. The show is called Graves. It stars Nick Nolte as the most unique ex-president you ever saw. John Michael Cern, the creative executive producer of Graves, will be with us as our lead guest. We'll also have the executive producers and stars of a series that will get its play at the New York Television Festival later this month. It's called F-D. And it's the first New York Television Festival entry in their independent pilot competition that is already playing as a series on smart TV sets and smart TV devices through Funny or Die. You'll meet the producers and people behind that series next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. At the screening of the American Museum of Natural History of the second season of Using Dangerously on Nat Geo Channel, one of the executives said, This time, it wasn't enough with the second season to just showcase or illustrate the problem or illustrate the issues. We have to show solutions, and we made sure that our correspondents did that. Were any marching orders given to the correspondents here in America Divided? Don't just show us the issue, show us some solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we sought out with every one of the stories not just not just the most striking and severe like points of kind of oppression around the country. We sought out moments of conflict, points where there was a problem, but there was a community that was organizing to address it, or there were political forces that were organized to address it, which is not not just useful because it makes better television, because it produces more dramatic tension and gives you more action and more things to film, which is obviously important, but also because it shows the possibility that change can happen. So in a lot of these stories, we actually were filming and were participating in the process of victories happening around the issues that we were covering. I mean, Lucian should talk a bit about the story that he was on the ground producing in North Carolina about voting rights. But just briefly for the education story with Jesse Williams, I mean, the school district was, by all of the scrutiny that we were bringing and by this, the increasing momentum that these community groups there, like the Dream Defenders and this group called FAST were bringing on the school district, was forced to make a whole series of concessions to the movement over the course of the story unfolding, and by the end of it, there needs to be vigilance, and there needs to be the school board needs to continue to listen to the demands of the families and the communities on the ground there, but it seems like they're beginning to make some serious progress.
As Rick said, I would add too. I mean, with the North Carolina story. It was a very complicated story about money and politics and voting rights and kind of, who is in control of the democracy, private interest or people. And, we highlighted various aspects of that. One was around voting rights. One was around congressional and legislative redistricting. One was around a particular problem in North Carolina and the East Coast, generally around coal ash pollution. And in all fronts of that, during our filming, the people we were filming with had, significant legislative or public victories, with the voting rights and the gerrymandering, redistricting issues. In both cases, laws and districts were struck down as unconstitutional, primarily because of the consistent effort, multi-year effort of the, kind of advocates and communities who stood up and said, no, this is not right. And this has to change. And, what we really looked for in the series, as Rick was saying, was moments like that and people like that, both to sort of show, to obviously, as you said, to, kind of highlight the most important conflicts, but also to show the audience and to show kind of other organizers and advocates and people who want to make the world better, the country better, that change is possible and that there are people out there who share the problems that they have and that are doing something about it. And that was, tremendously important to us in the stories we told. We didn't want to just paint a picture of the problem. We wanted to paint a picture of the problem and the people that were striving for a solution. So, those were the marching orders. Those are the marching orders we gave ourselves from the very beginning, before we had correspondence, before we had platform, but when it was an idea and a dream, we always said that, what is going to be central to this project is showcasing solutions and people making the world a better place. And I think we were successful, happily so, gratefully so, in that goal.
Richard, wrapping up, do you see America Divided as an ongoing project, or if not, doing with your colleagues more of these type of projects where the documentary has a notable illustrating the issue and the solutions?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are we're already planning season two. Yeah, definitely. This is a project and an exploration that we definitely plan to continue and that should continue. And it's a very exciting kind of format and an important issue and definitely a project that we see going forward.
American Divided, Season 1, Episode 2, this Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Epix. Tokyo Exclusive Web Ad Network is available in your area on cable and satellite. In some markets, also available as video on demand as well. For more details about the program and the channel, here's where you go online, www.epix.com. www.epix.com. I want to give a shout out, by the way, to one of the other executive producers who is going to be with us today, Sally Grunstein. Unfortunately, she has something to deal with on late notice, but we want to make sure she gets credit also for being a major part of the series. Lucy and Reed, Richard Rowley, thank you both very much for being with us. Good luck the rest of the way with American Divided, and hopefully what will be lasting about this series is that these issues bring us closer together to getting the solutions. And we thank you both for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Lucy and Reed and Richard Rowley joining us live from New York here this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We'll have more of the program for you, including our next guest after with some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you love fairy tales are not just fun for adults, but fun for kids, well, Audible.com has been releasing some wonderful Hans Christian Andersen tales with some terrific notables doing the narration. The latest out this week, The Snow Queen, that wonderful Andersen tale. And who's the narrator this time? None other than the co-star of the popular British comedy that's gone around the world, from absolutely fabulous, Joanna Lumley. She narrates The Snow Queen, and you can get it by getting a 30-day free trial to Audible.com. It's an Amazon company that provides spoken digital entertainment and information. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service. And the customer service, because from Amazon.com, top of the line. So whether you're into fairy tales, the world of television, the world of radio, the world of film, whatever your tastes are, there's an audiobook right for you and just waiting as one of the 100,000 titles available through Audible.com. Remember, to get that book and 30-day free trial, audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. For a great sound experience that can last a lifetime, it's audible.com. When we come back, our Concentrated Question of the Week, and we'll reunite with Alice Corral, the producer and main subject of Los Cowboys, who'll join us live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to Tomorrow Will Be Televised on the home for great internet radio programming, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Motley Fool Answers, one of several shows that the Motley Fool provides on this very network. Check out Motley Fool Answers every Tuesday, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best to be TRV 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Will Be Televised for our first episode of October 2016. Simon Appleman with you live from New York, 73 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming away shortly. If you have a question or comment, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And following the interview, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you win the new Twin Peaks FAQ book from Applause Books. So stand by for that. Nearly 2 years ago, we introduced you to someone who wanted to be not just a TV producer, but a TV subject. He did it with a series called Los Cowboys, a very unusual side of Latino culture. The series premiered in 2015 on Hulu. That's when we had him on this program. Well, now the series is running on Galavision Sunday night, 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Joining us live from Los Angeles, and now with his own production company to boot, Alex Corral. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Simon, how are you?
Very fine, thank you. Great to reunite with you. First of all, tell us what's been happening with Los Cowboys and what feedback are you getting about the play on Galavision?
So the show is on Galavision. It actually went to Univision.com first, and we saw some great traction there. And then from there, the network was interested in putting the show onto Galavision. So it's actually the second window there. They discovered the show via Hulu last year, and, you know, this whole Hispanic millennial, you know, content play is something that's very new. Few people are doing it, and therefore there aren't really any real homes to house, you know, English content that's tailored towards Hispanic millennials, right?
And this is also a first for Galavision because the majority of their programming comes from Televisa in Mexico and other Mexico sources. They do very, very few productions that are done in the United States, yours being one of them.
Exactly. One of the things is that the entire Televisa model is that, you know, in the past, television has been divided either, you know, between Spanish, Hispanic has been divided by, you know, defined as Spanish language content. That being said, it's very easy in generations, a couple generations ago, or even last generation of people, is that, you know, you can get content from Televisa, from Mexico, and it works, right? It's in Spanish. But now it's no longer about that. You know, Hispanics have been here for a long time now. We're acculturated. We're English dominant. And what's happened is to get content, you know, that is relevant to the U.S. Hispanic experience is very different, right? And Televisa doesn't do that. So to just go ahead and pick up a program from a catalog that's already existing is something that is needs to change and is evolving. And we see it now with Univision and Telemundo, both televising, you know, new formats. For example, La Voz Kids, which is, the Voice, but in Spanish for Telemundo, or La Banda. We see more original productions now here in the U.S. So this is definitely the direction in which the market is going.
And we also should point out that NBC Universo did their first scripted series earlier this year, which got rave reviews. The series with the Mexican regional Mexican music star that had quite a bit of English in it. It was there were parts that were quite bilingual.
Absolutely, yeah, and you know, it's really what it is. It's starting to depict what Hispanic life is in the U.S., right? And we see that all the time. It's whether you're in New York or in Los Angeles or, you know, wherever you go, you are. You know, the demographic's so big. You know, 1 in 5 Americans are of Hispanic descent. So you start seeing that in the play on language. It's no longer about being in language. It's about speaking in culture.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question or comment for Alex, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Either way, soon you get aboard, either phone or chat room, the sooner we get you on the air or get your voice heard. Reacquaint everybody with Los Cowboys. What was the idea of the series, and what does it depict?
So the idea is really to showcase bicultural Hispanics in the U.S. So it's a cast of characters that are not just bilingual, but they're really bicultural, and they all practice what's known as charrería, or Mexican rodeo, which is why it's called Los Cowboys. But their day jobs, guy's a firefighter, other's a florist, another person is a model. You have someone that works a corporate gig, and you have folks that come from all walks of life, but they share one thing in common, which is this passion for the rodeo. So it's very much kind of like a subculture here in the U.S., but it's very mainstream in Mexico. And what it is, it's really a bunch of people, different backgrounds, but the one thing that holds them in common is their love and passion for their culture. Very much like a lot of people here in the U.S., right? We all come from different backgrounds, but the one thing that we're proud of is our roots and stuff. So it really relates to a lot of people, and you see people going from Staples Center down to a Mexican rodeo, or seeing a Mexican regional concert, and then flipping the switch and going to a, you know, a hip-hop concert or a pop concert. So it's really showcasing how Hispanics are in the U.S., and that's really where the idea stemmed from, was to how can we showcase Hispanics living in the U.S. that are acculturated, that are bicultural, and there's this extreme, this rodeo, this 100-year-old tradition of Mexican rodeo, and now, you know, what it is today is just, you know, very modern, you know, likings that we live in a very modern world, right? We live the normal American lifestyle. It just happens to be that this is a hobby of ours.
Why did you want to not only produce this, but be a subject?
You know, I did not want to be a subject. We were shooting the reel, and I actually, by hobby, am a cowboy, and I have horses and all that stuff. It's a passion of mine. And we were shooting this, and we originally, this show was slated out for, originally the show was going to be a competition reality show. But then we saw Hulu really liked the idea of a docuseries. And as we were developing this, I was shooting the trailer, or the sizzle to this. And as I was shooting the sizzle, we realized there needed to be something else. So if you look at the show, you know, the first cut on the sizzle reel was all cowboy related, and I think me as a producer was really the Alex Corral show, what he wanted to see, which is bull riding, the horses and the actual rodeo. But as we took it into a docuseries, what it ended up being was we needed some contrast, and there wasn't any. We looked at the first cut, and how do we do that? And we were like, well, who does not like the rodeo world? Who is someone that can, you know, take us into this world, you know, from a different lens, give us a different perspective? And that was my brother, and it happened to be my brother. And my brother is complete opposite as me. You know, my brother is, you know, hates the rodeo, hates flies, hates dust, hates all that stuff. He's a classical, you know, musician, went to Carnegie Mellon University, is a bassoonist, is in an orchestra, and has absolutely does not like it at all. So as we put him in the show, I was the kind of like the common denominator here between everyone. I was kind of like the person that put everyone together. So we have our very hardcore cowboy, and my brother would never hang out. And they're actually the two cast favorites, Rob and Joey. So it's almost like I had to be in a subject so that I could connect both worlds. And really, you see both ends of the spectrum in terms of the Hispanic world. You see this very regional cowboy guy to this very acculturated Hispanic that has nothing to do with their roots. It's just very, as we would call it, Americanized, right? And
go ahead, Alex.
No, and I had to be in it. I had to be in it. So that's really how it came out. And then one thing led to another, and now I'm the subject of the entire show.
And how has the show evolved into the second season? Because people in television only see the first season, but they also see the second season, too.
So in the first season, it was more of just an intro to the characters. You know, there were half hours. Still, same thing with second season. But really, in half hour of content, it's kind of hard to get, you know, everyone deep into the lives of everyone. And it really was just an introduction to the rodeo world, because no one really knows this. Like I said, this rodeo thing is a subculture here in the U.S. So we kind of had to educate people on what the sport was and what it meant and what it is. So that was a lot of the first season. The second season, we took a deeper dive. It was less about the rodeo, more about the lives of the characters. And one of our main characters ended up having triplets. So we kind of saw that, and then we also see the evolution of people struggling, you know, with everyday lives, trying to balance work, family, and this hobby. So it's something, you know, whether it be golf or whether it be horseback riding, a lot of people relate to this. So as you take a look at second season, it's really more a deeper dive into the actual personal lives of the characters.
Al Terrell is the producer and subject of Love Cowboys, now playing on Galavision Sunday nights, 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Appleman will be with you live from the other coast of New York, where it's 73 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Alex, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. And remember, coming up on Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, our special episode with Academy Award nominee and the co-star of the new HBO series, Divorce, Thomas Hayden Church. Divorce is part of a wonderful pair of new comedies or dramedies coming to HBO this Sunday night. Divorce at 10, and the new Issa Rae event, that's Insecure, at 10:30. Thomas Hayden Church, Academy Award nominee, Divorce co-star, live on Tomorrow We Televise this Wednesday. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Remember, it's changing time period from normal. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. Back in the early 1960s, Alex, there were a pair of television series that dealt with, scripted-wise, the rodeo scene. There was Jack Lord, years before Y5O, with McGarrett being Stoney Burke on ABC. And then there was Wide Country with Earl Holliman and Andrew Prine as brothers who were also in the rodeo. They both only lasted a year. And then nobody has done a rodeo-themed series since. Or if they have, it's been like on an episode-by-episode basis in different plots. Do you see the possibility of maybe Los Cowboys becoming a scripted show?
You know, I think it could be, especially when we're talking about this target demo, more because it resonates so much with this huge population in the U.S. But, you know, really, when you're talking about scripted, I really do think it comes down to the writing, right? I mean, you can even look at, like, Magnificent Seven, the movie, and you kind of see, like, oh, wow, it's like a Western that's out, you know? I really do think it comes down to the writing, and in terms of, you know, we see a lot of subcultures that are out there, but I in terms of scripted, I definitely say it comes down to the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Incidentally, you can get episodes of Stoney Burke with Jack Lord on YouTube. Leslie Stevens who was the creator of that series, did that series a year or two before The Outer Limits, his big series on ABC that changed the course of science fiction in many, many ways. And Wide Country, you can see clips of episodes also on YouTube. Very interesting shows, but thinking more of Stoney Burke, I have to say, really, really good stuff. Jack Lord gives a good performance. And Bruce Dern is in that show, as well as the late, great actor Warren Oates. Very interesting cast with Stoney Burke. You can see that again on YouTube as well as Wide Country. Will there be a third season of Most Cowboys coming up?
You know, we will know in about a month. You know, so we just premiered last week. And actually, you know, it's not Sunday night. The premieres when they switched the air date. And it actually premieres 10:30 p.m. on Wednesdays. So it's the show itself, we know that the ratings have been solid in the sense of it's not like it's a spiking viewership or anything like that on Galavision. It's definitely the first of its kind across the network as a whole. But what we're really seeing interesting numbers is online. Anytime a new episode's posted, even just on their social channels, we have a high view-through rate, meaning the shows are being completed, and we're averaging about 30 to 30,000 views per post. So in terms of digital, which is what the series was originally meant to be, you know, the numbers are pretty compelling. So in terms of going into a third season, we do feel that if we continue on this track for about another month, we will be into a third season.
So make sure I understand, Alex, the show now premieres Wednesdays at 10:30, but you also still have a Sunday time slot, or is it now on Wednesday?
It's now on Wednesday.
Got it. Okay, great. Thanks for the updated info. Now, since we last had you on, you have formed a production company called Corral 360. Tell us about what that company is doing, especially with television.
So we are still developing formats. And in terms of television, we're constantly in talks with the networks as well as, you know, the Hulus and Netflixes of the world. But we are developing content now, even so in the scripted space, where, you know, we are developing content that really speaks, again, to this U.S. Hispanic experience, which means the content's Hispanic. Characters tend to be Hispanic, but it's not necessarily Hispanic, right? It's English. And what we're doing now is we are still in talks with Univision. We're doing a lot of work with them, and we're also doing a ton of work with, you know, other people in the space. But I wish, Simon, we could talk in like 3 weeks, actually 2 weeks, because we have some exciting things coming in the pipeline that I just can't say right now. But definitely in the unscripted space and scripted arenas.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the networks like Univision, and by the way, Univision has a project now called Storyhouse, where they are doing English and Spanish language shows, not just for those networks, Univision, Unimax, Galvin, et cetera, but also for other networks. They're doing a project for HBO. They're partnering with Netflix on the El Chapo miniseries that will be coming up next year. Do you get the sense that all the Latino networks are more favoring shows that aren't just Spanish language, that they're bilingual, English language, Spanglish, that anything is possible now, as opposed to it has to be in Spanish, it has to be produced this way, it has to be produced in such a place, whether it's Mexico, Puerto Rico, or Spain, or wherever?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's because the entire demographic has shifted that way. You take a look at the traditional Univision viewer, it was my grandmother. I'm now, you know, the offspring of my parents, and they watch Univision. And now you get to the second and third generation Hispanic, which is myself. And, you know, you take a look at the traditional viewer, it was around 60 years ago. A lot of them are dead, or it's the new generation, or you look at myself, and we have the most viewing options, and we are probably the most elusive demographic for anyone to reach, whether you're a television network or even an advertiser. And that's because we have more options. We can consume content in English and in Spanish. Our language preference nowadays is English because we're born and raised here, so by naturally our language preference is English. So you have to shift that way, because now you can take a look at, you know, the numbers compared to these viewers in the past. You know, though the networks are still the top two networks amongst Hispanics, you know, the total you know, I was reading something, you know, don't quote me word for word, but I was reading a Wall Street Journal article that was talking about, you know, Televisa and Univision, and the viewership has gone down, you know, immensely in terms of numbers, but it's still the top Hispanic network. And that's just because the offspring of these viewers are able to consume content in English. So we're watching all the other networks and Netflix, and you are essentially competing with Orange is the New Black, with The Voice, with, you know, Empire and Blackish and everything. There's so many other things out there, the viewing options, and also the digital era, right, whether it be a YouTube video. I mean, just the way we consume content is shifted. So there definitely needs to be a shift in content. I know I thirst, myself being the demographic, I thirst for content with people that live and speak to my experiences.
Incidentally, El Vato is the NBC Universal show I was referring to, and that is going into a second season next year. I was really impressed with the way that show went, the directing of the show, the fact that it blended music so well. It had a lot to say about inside the music scene. I thought one of the performers, Christina Rolland, who played like the main assistant to the star, I thought gave a wonderful performance, and she's like a fine to watch along with some of the other people on that show. But you get a sense again that there's a big opening now with all these services about let's have Latino programming, but let's have programming that is, you know, brings Latino experience to a wider audience, whether it's an individual experience or whether it is a group experience.
No, absolutely. I mean, the way I see it is, look, it's not just about, you know, you can say that about, you know, Blackish, right? African-American cast, but it's on a broadcast network. It's not like we're saying, hey, this only belongs on BET. What's it doing? I mean, the show's crushing it. It's an amazing show. It's hilarious. It's almost, you know, it's just portraying, it's another segment, right? Same thing with Fresh Off the Boat or even Jane the Virgin. You know, Jane the Virgin, great show. It's, you know, well written. It's funny. It's doing well. You know, it's on for multiple seasons. And you can say, I would even say Jane the Virgin's kind of like a pioneer in that space. And, you know, it even mocks the novella scene. And I relate to it. You know, it's something that that I think is It is definitely, I want to say, not a trend, but it's definitely needed. Especially when you're looking at 1 in 5 people in this country, just by demographic, you're trying to target this demographic, it's one thing. But, you know, why is it 1 in 5? The 1 in 5 people in this country that are Hispanic aren't necessarily Spanish-dominant. You know, a big chunk of them are, but they're not necessarily Spanish-dominant. I mean, it's total market. And you look at the U.S. as a whole, you know, we're a melting pot of people, culture, races. And really it's about just having great content, great writers. And I think people relate.
The program is Los Cowboys, and it's now available on Galavision Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, Season 1 and Season 2 episodes, and who knows, maybe a third season and more coming up there. Check your local listings where Galavision is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.univision.com/Galavision. That's www.univision.com/Galavision. Again, Los Cowboys, Wednesday nights, we have be corrected on the time period, Wednesday nights, 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And Alex, we would love to have you back on in a couple of weeks when you have the original programs you're going to be doing, when they're announced, and you know what networks they're on. Please come back. We would love to have you on. It's a pleasure to reunite with you. Congrats on the second season of Cowboys, the Galavision move, and all of that to you and your Crowd 360 company down the road.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, hopefully we'll be on. We'll connect in a couple of weeks.
Okay, you got it. Take care.
Take care, Simon. Bye-bye.
Alex Corral, producer and subject of Los Cowboys and head of his own production company, Corral 360, joining us live from Los Angeles. We'll tell you about who's coming up on Tomorrow We Televise shortly, but right now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Get your thinking caps ready, because if you get the answer, you will win the wonderful book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. The question we posed last Monday is still in play. Remember the series The Night Stalker? It started as a TV movie from Dan Curtis, ABC Movie of the Week, one of the best ever. Then there's the sequel, The Night Strangler. And then came the series that was on for a season, starring Darryl McGavin as an intrepid reporter who gets himself involved with the forces of the supernatural. Here's our question. What was The Night Stalker's real name? What was The Night Stalker's real name? We want first and last full name. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and your full mailing address. You can also tweet the answer using Twitter, #TWBT. That's Twitter, #TWBT. The Twitter option, as always, made available by our wonderful friends at Hopscotch, the folks that invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can learn how at hopscotch.com. Remember, first correct answer gets it. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. And we will repeat the question on Wednesday when Thomas Hayden Church of Divorce joins us for his exclusive interview Wednesday at noon. That's Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. So remember, get involved in the game. That's how you win. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Twin Peaks FAQ. It's the wonderful book about the ABC mystery series of the 1990s, coming back next year on Showtime with the creators of the original series, Mark Frost and David Lynch, writing it all and David Lynch directing it all. We don't know yet when the premiere date is, but of course we will keep you posted, and we'll try to get David and Mark on the program. That will be dynamite. By the way, I can tell you that Angelo Badamente, the composer of the series, will be back in the new series for Showtime. So once again, SimonApple04@yahoo.com, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Get involved with our Patrick question of the week, and all the very best. Again, Wednesday, our special episode of Robbie Televised, special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, with Academy Award nominee and the co-star of new HBO series, Divorce, which premieres this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, Thomas Hayden Church. And on Friday's episode, rescheduled from last Friday, the organizer of the recent multicultural Sizzle Reel Upfront here in New York, coming to Los Angeles mid-October, Kiki Melendez, and the executive producer of the new WE series, that's WE-TV, My Life is a Telenovela. It premieres that night. We'll have a same-day interview with executive producer Todd Lubin. And next Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, we'll have the creative executive producer of one of the two epic original scripted series premiering on October 16th. It's called Graves. It stars Nick Nolte as a very unique ex-president, to say the least. Josh Michael Stern, the creator, will join us. Plus, the creative executive producers of the Funny or Die series F-D that is getting a special play at the New York Television Festival later this month. That's all coming up this week and early next. Right here, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in on today's episode late, want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. Check out the podcast version on iTunes.com and Apple TV's wonderful iTunes podcast app. And check out my column in Media Village. We started first of a series of columns on Sinclair, the biggest station group in the country, and what they're doing in original programming. First up, Full Measure, the Sunday morning investigative series hosted by Cheryl Atkinson. You'll find that at MediaVillage.com. That's www.MediaVillage.com. Remember, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What do you think about where TV's at, where it's going? We'd love to know, so email us. Again, that email is SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. And any way you communicate, remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. That is the truth. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, and he tells Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator, Mr. Al Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Orwell.com and Amazon Company. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Also, a great rest of your start to the high holiday season. Roll up Jewish listeners, happy Rosh Hashanah, Shabbat Tovah, and remember, we're with you again Wednesday with Thomas Hayden Church of Divorce, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.